Well, I'm joined on the line from Abkhazia by three of the friends of Manfred Petridge. That's Vital, Carl, and Robert. We'll start with you, Vital. Can you just say something about how you got to know Manfred?
It all started in 2003, when in Switzerland in the Hotel Union in Lucerne, there was this first conference about 9/11, together with Gerhard Wisniewski, Andreas von Bülow, Wespe Tarpley, and I think even Michael Rupert was there too. So soon after that, Manfred started his blog, Alles Schall und Rauch. And after that, I got to know him in the early stage. So for now, I knew Manfred for about 15 years.
And what would you say singled him out from the, you know, the many campaigners and writers and researchers that you know?
Okay, he's like Thierry Messon or Te Seker. He looks behind the mirror. He wants to see the truth. And what's very important for Manfred, what was very important for Manfred was to see the real news. You know, not the second-hand information, but he wants to have the information firsthand. So very often, some of my friends and myself, we traveled actually to such destination and got the information directly from the people in those lands.
Okay, so you are actually doing the job of journalism. Why is it that you think, Vital, that it's so difficult to trust what we see on the TV, the big networks?
You know, it's you have to look 120 years back. Journalism or the newspaper were never, ever intended to give the truth. They were all intended to serve for corporate interests. So money talks, bullshit walks also refers to a newspaper. So it's an illusion to think that the newspapers are here to tell the truth. Newspapers are in the hand of the few of the persons who actually controls them, and they have to say what they wanted.
Okay, well, we're also joined by Carl. Can you say something about how you got to know Manfred, Carl?
I knew Vitali first, but I lived for 40 years from 82 until 07 about. I lived in Russia as a representative of Swiss industry, and I had I had a good insight, let's say, in the living and the reality of the first of the Soviet Union and afterward on Russia. And as more as I have read the Western newspapers, I understood that I'm obviously living in the wrong country. But it was completely else living here than was written about in the Western newspapers. I became a little bit more suspicious about what's presented to us. And then I have friends for a long time, friends in Abkhazia. Then Vitali told me that a good friend of his, Manfred, lives in Abkhazia. And then always when I was in Abkhazia, I visited Manfred. And so I got good acquaintance of Manfred and of his ideas. And I have really seen that Manfred has a look through. He looks behind, as Vitali said, behind the mirror.
Okay, Carl, but look, you know, your Swiss colleagues, your friends are going to say, well, you've betrayed your country. You've gone over to the other side. That's what many of them might be saying, even or thinking, even if they don't dare to tell you. What is it, do you think, then, about the Russian way of doing things, which was right, where the Swiss and the European way is wrong?
First, I do not believe in terms as right and wrong. Each behavior depends on a lot of different facts, which makes the terms of right and wrong a little bit suspicious for
me. Yeah, well, okay, but you said you're on the wrong country, but so
yeah, the wrong country because now I'm living. When I read the newspapers in Switzerland about Russia, I felt that they must write. They have mixed up the countries. That's not Russia they are writing about. I'm obviously living in the right country. I'm living in Russia, but what they're writing about Russia, that's not Russia. In this way, I meant I'm in the wrong country. You should have a look at me at the moment. I'm running about with all the Swiss insignias as the Swiss flags. And so, I like Switzerland. I have nothing against Switzerland, but it's a little bit sad that Switzerland is going to deteriorate. Switzerland is a pity. It's not more the Swiss Switzerland I knew before when I was a child.
Well, I think you know what you know. I think Carl, it's exactly the same for me and many of my friends here in Britain. We're seeing the destruction of the country that we grew up in. In fact, right now the National Health Service, the health of the nation, is being destroyed by the City of London and by the oligarchy in Britain. It's of course, going to mean the deaths of many, many people in the future, obviously with the pandemic too. So what about Russia and Abkhazia? Can you give us a bit of an insight into life there and why it's something that you feel happier with than back in Switzerland?
The most happier from what I really estimate the Russian people. Russian people, even for a long time, doesn't believe the state authorities. Everybody feels cheated by the state authorities. And let's say, for instance, the difference with these idiot prescriptions, how to behave with the so-called pandemia. When in Switzerland they say you have to wear a mask, so each Swiss they wear a mask. In Russia, if you, for instance, in the Moscow metro underground, each 2 minutes comes an announcement: you have to wear a mask in the underground. But in fact, if you see there about 5 or maximum 10% people wearing a mask, that's all. They do not believe in states, and that makes me happy in Russia that people is a little bit more clever than with us.
Okay. Well, how about you, Robert? What's your connection to Manfred Petrus, who sadly died recently?
Yes, I know Manfred a long time. He made some meetings every month in Switzerland. We have go to some places and we talk about the first talk, walk about the 9/11 fake and so on. Manfred goes a lot of time to visit the Bilderberg meetings and organize them and other stuff to see what behind the government is doing, the people. And I like it with good free of mind and not this peer publicity things that we normally read in the newspapers.
Okay, back to you, Vital. Can you just take us through, what happened to Manfred? I mean, many of us will be familiar with his blog, the All Smoke and Mirrors blog, which was prolific. I think thousands of articles on there over the years. But I understand that he thought he had Parkinson's, and then it turned out it was motor neurone disease, which is more serious because you know, I spoke to him, I interviewed him back only in July, and he, it seems, was only managed to survive another 6 or 8 weeks after that.
We, in about 4 or 5 months ago, I especially went to Manfred together with a doctor from Switzerland. He's a really expert about these diseases, and we could cure Manfred quite a bit because he was multimorbid. There were several illnesses at the same time. But when we left, we were quite sure that it's not that serious. And sadly, the illness what he had was quickly developing, and his death was very unexpected for us.
Okay, can you just explain, you know, what was the actual problem? Because, and maybe also explain and let our listeners know how old Manfred was.
He was 69 years old.
Yeah, and do we know what it was that he died of?
Yes, it was kind of his muscles gradually reduced. You know, all the muscles he had in his body gradually reduced. It started from the extremities, going to the inside, and at the end were the lungs. So sadly, there was a disease which we thought we had overcome 4 or 5 months ago, but in fact, it was stronger than what we expected.
And Carl, can you just pick out a couple of stories that Manfred's covered, of ideas that Manfred has explored that were particularly significant to you?
It is mostly the thing about 9/11. It all started with 9/11. 9/11 was the turning point for Manfred. You know, Manfred before was a banker. He was in the finance sector. He made some programming for the financial industry. And he knew one guy who was working in the Twin Towers. And he explained to Manfred what happened in these days, etc. And from then on, Manfred turned out to be a blogger. First of all, he made this blog just for himself and for his friends. It wasn't the intention to make for a broader public. But later on, he continued, and he saw that people were interested in the background information. Just for you, for the understanding of your listeners, it was never ever Manfred alone. There's a quite big network of people who supported him from the back and gave him the first-hand information he needed.
Finally, back to you, Vital. What were your particular interests? Give us maybe a couple of stories for you that were maybe that you were involved in digging up the information on, that give us an idea and the listeners an idea of what Manfred's mission was.
Look, Manfred had a mission to inform the public, to inform especially the younger audience, not to trust the official narratives, and especially also to think about. That's what I mentioned. We continued his blog on his in his spirit, and I mentioned that all of his listeners should not only become stay as consumers, also to become producers. So whenever you see on the highway interesting military convoy passing by, informers, or whenever you see any strange things happen in your country, inform us. And that's what he complained to me quite a lot, that his listeners take the informations, but he's very seldom get information back. So that's why at the end, after 26 million readers, he said, I said everything, so I'm going to reduce a little bit my writing.
So do you think you will be able to continue with Manfred's work to some extent?
To some extent, it will be limited, but we have the network who supported Manfred is still alive, and we will continue, but we will not do it in the same level. So that's why we tried to open the blog for more information from different languages. For instance, we have an interview of 5 hours of Thierry Messon, which we took in Syria, in Damascus. So it's not yet published. And
well, I mean, he's a superb source, actually. Thierry Messon, when I had my little freelance journalist's office here in Bristol, after the September the 11th attacks, and I was sort of looking into them, suddenly these two books from Thierry Messon plopped down through my letterbox. I think it was Pentagate, and I can't remember the title of the other one. And he, it seems to me, was the first journalist in the world to get some really good first stamp books out about what was really going on 9/11.
That's the reason why I went to Syria in 2016 to meet Thierry. He was living at the time then. And with the two groups I guided to Syria, we were every time Thierry took half an evening to talk with us about what's happened. And Thierry has very, very good inside information. But, you know, it's not only Thierry on the world. Like William Engdahl, for instance, is a good friend of mine. Also De Saker, which is a Swiss guy who now lives in Florida. They are inside information. Or recently, we published something about Hans Rickenbacher, which was a former lieutenant in the Swiss Army who has inside information. We also have access to, for instance, to military laboratories, which give us information which are not intended for the public.
Well, that sounds absolutely fascinating. What's the best way to keep track of what you're doing there in Manfred's memory?
The best thing is to keep on looking on the blog. We will try to publish some information which we think it's worth to publish for a broader audience. And you see, we cannot publish everything we know. So it was always a selection also when Manfred was doing the blog. The best thing is, as Robert mentioned, we meet us every first Tuesday, for instance, in Lucerne every month. So there we have the talk. And what Manfred also wanted, that the people come together and have a direct talk with each other.
Well, so you're actually having meetings in Switzerland, are you?
Yes, we have the meetings almost all over the place. We have meetings in Germany, in Austria. I even think there are some in Great Britain. I have to check. But otherwise, you know, there's always some gatherings together, for instance, when they are the World Economic Forum in Davos, or when they are the Bilderberger. Usually one or two people of us are at the Bilderberger conference. So we always will be able to find each other. From time to time, there is a congress. For instance, there was a very good congress recently on the 11th of September near Basel with Daniele Ganser, with Ken FM, with Christoph Pfluger, with a lot of people who are very active, not only in the front, but also in the back.
Well, that's, you know, you are now maybe coming a bit more to the front after spending a long time in the back, as you say. This idea of the pandemic, that I suppose, Vital, is what you'll be judged on, because certainly many of us around the world have seen right through this, because there is a 0.2% mortality rate here in Britain, and yet the whole country has been locked down for many, many months. We're now being let free again, and it almost seems as if we've been good boys and girls. 80% of the British people have had this experimental vaccine, they call it, which is actually not really a vaccine at all. and say we've been good, and it's like the dogs have now been let out for a little bit of a run around. But there's something pretty sinister going on. I wonder if you could sum up what you make of it.
Look, it's very easy. I'm a rational guy. I have some knowledge in medicine. I studied a couple of years medicine. My mother is 88 years old. And when this coronavirus started, I was calling the military laboratory of the Swiss Army. It's called Labor Schwyz. And I asked these guys, how do you treat coronavirus? And, you know, they have different levels of laboratory. The level 4 is like in Wuhan for the highly toxic stuff. And I asked them, where do you see corona? They say to me, oh, it's 2+, a little bit like influenza. And when those guys tell me that, and I know they made a serious job in Damascus in Syria by debunking the chemical attack, the coronavirus is similar to the grip, so the influenza virus. So for me, then the story was over about corona. For me, this is nothing else than another name for influenza. And you know, we had this 100 years ago. We had the same story again, like today. Look in the old archives; it's always the same story. And I think within 1 or 2 years, we are all going laughing about how stupid we were.
Yeah, I think it's very important to see there is no pandemic. There is nothing. Stop, period. Nothing. And every man and woman, when you look around, you see this situation.
So what's happening then?
It's a media campaign. You know, see, certainly. You know, yeah, we have 1929. The banks were robbing the people with the money. And this time are not the banks, but the so-called data financial industry. You know, this influenza or these vaccines are completely worthless. For instance, just for your information, I know someone who was in charge to build a vaccination station in Switzerland 3 years ago. And the deadline for this vaccination station was December 2019. And when they start with the first building, about 3 months later, the guy comes and says, we need a second building. Also the deadline, December 2019. And the people start getting wondered, what the heck is going? Why a second building? And soon enough, 6 months later, came, we need a third building. Also, it has been delayed, the deadline, December 2019. And that was 3 years before 2019. So, you see, if those people knew that we need a big charge of vaccines for 2019, it cannot be an accident. It has to be something well planned. And if you have this information firsthand, some people who really worked on those buildings, you know, that's all BS.
Yeah. Well, okay, so can you just give us the website again and let the listeners know if they can subscribe by email or something?
They can go to the website of Manfred, this called Alles Schall und Rauch .blogspot.com. Maybe in the future, and Tony, with your help, we will also make more English speaking articles, because as you mentioned, we see that a lot of people around the world would like to share this information.
That would be nice for me, but I can always use a translation service. I think, you know, the interesting, I mean, the German public also needs to know, and you know, maybe they might speak a bit of English. But look, let's round up, Vital, just you know, and anyone else that wants to chip in, Manfred and I met first at the Bilderberg conference in 2016. We ended up having a drink and a talk and something to eat for about two and a half hours. And it was almost as if we'd met soulmate, you know, because yeah. he had been doing very similar work in Germany to the, what I've been doing in England about the Bilderberg. What do you three make of the Bilderberg conferences and the fact that we've had no conference this year or last year?
But you just have to understand, I went to the Bilderberger way back in the time when there was Stresa. This was my first encounter with Bilderberg. It's about 15 or 20 years ago, at a time where nobody took care about Bilderbergers. The Bilderbergers are not the top decisions. These are the second or third level. And we think you do not need to go to the third and second level. You have to look what the first level is doing. Those guys who are planning all that stuff. Klaus Schwab is nothing. He's just a transmitter. He has to do what the other people tell him to do. That's it. And we have some of the first level the decision makers here in Switzerland. One of the biggest decision maker and which should be watched very closely are the Bank for International Settlement in Basel. They meet every month, and these decisions there have a very big influence in the world, not the one which transmits Mr. Schwab or the other guys.
And the others, what do you make of Bilderberg?
Yes, yeah, the Bilderberg. It's I was still in the last Bilderberg in maybe in Montreux, and yeah, it's a meeting from men's. They get some information from the big money. And not more. They cannot do anything. Other things. They must be say okay. I do that. And that's all. What I think. I think the problem in the Western world is they goes to the I say the American ideology. And this ideology, it's very bad for all people, and maybe it's also bad for the big people. But they have a longer time than they see that not good is for these people, and we can't fix all the situation not when we not change this ideology, and we hope we the people's can see that big problem that we have.
Well, it is a problem. It's an enormous problem. The American way, the American public don't seem to really know much about Europe or the rest of the world. But what we're seeing in Britain here, and maybe the same is in Switzerland, is the increasing McDonaldization of the whole country. That is to say, American systems being brought in here, there and everywhere. And of course, the biggest problem is that the Americans seem to want to pick a fight with the Russians and the Chinese as well.
Now, look, I lived for 15 years in Los Angeles every winter, so I know the American ideology pretty well. When I came back to Switzerland, I said, I hope that this never ever comes to Europe, this so-called Machiavellianization, as you said. You see, when I saw people there having a bachelor degree, they were not able to read and write correctly. They made so many errors. They said, no, that never happens to us. But unfortunately, we were going down the same path, you know. We start eating this. I went twice in my life to a McDonald's. Once I was forced by Saudi Arabian guys and once by an Iranian. But Otherwise, I never ever go to this McDonald's stuff. I do not consume any television, expect of enemy research, but that's all. But you see, you have to understand, like you in Great Britain, for instance, by us in the center of Switzerland, if you go to the small valleys, there you find the real and true spirit of Switzerland is still alive, like with you on your countryside.
Okay, well, that's a nice way to finish. Vital, Carl, and Robert, carrying on the work of Manfred Petrisch, who died recently. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.